Deborah Plunkett is Senior Advisor for Equality at the National Security Agency, and I was fascinated by the pitch that I got about your work. Admiral Rogers and the intelligence community aware of the perception of the makeup of the IC brought you on to be the Senior Advisor for Equality. What's your mission in that job, and what do you and your office do in terms of how the IC is staffed? Thanks for coming on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. So my responsibility is to develop and deliver breakthrough strategies that allow NSA to take full advantage of the what we know already are the benefits of having a sufficiently diverse workforce such that we can do better against the mission. It really is that simple. My focus is on looking at everything from the point at which someone has the potential to become an NSA employee to the point at which they come and decide to leave, and everything that might happen in between, to focus on making sure we're maximizing their potential. But we're also taking advantage of what we can gain from having a diversity of experiences and views and opinions that come from your ethnicity, your culture, your gender, your race, your orientation.
When you first came into this job last fall, what was at least the perception of the makeup of the workforce, and how did that comport with the reality that you found as you dug into the data that you had available?
So, you know, I would say that the perception is probably very close to the reality, and that is that while we have made great progress in several areas over the years, the fact of the matter is we're not as diverse as we'd like to be. We're certainly not diverse consistent with the goals that we've set. So that was pretty consistent. And so that's what we've been working towards over the years.
What were the components of the strategy that you built to get to where you wanted to be? I was taken by this phrase, too male, too pale, and too stale.
So essentially, the strategy continues to be a work in progress with just 10 months under my belt. Mm-hmm. But it involves taking a hard look at all the processes that underpin how we attract, recruit, retain, recognize, reward, progress employees from the point at which they have the potential to come in until they leave. Mm-hmm. And looking at every one of those processes, a significant amount of talking to the workforce. So I've conducted focus groups around the NSA enterprise, listening to what the workforce believes, listening to what they think, and then using that information to then go look at what the data actually says. And to the extent that they match, then we have an opportunity. To the extent that they don't, a different opportunity, and that is to help educate the workforce on the facts.
Has any of that feedback surprised you in that you got feedback that either very heavily confirmed something that you suspected or maybe refuted something that you thought the workforce would think a certain way, and it turns out that maybe something was not as important to them as you thought, or anything like that?
You know, I don't think I've been surprised by any of the feedback. I have been taken aback a little bit by the passion.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
You know, emotion, passion, a grave personal and professional concern with members of our workforce about their own progression and advancement and destiny. Mm-hmm. And about the institution.
And what? How do you then use that data to decide how you're going to shape the strategy as it evolves?
Yeah, absolutely. So taking that input from the workforce, then looking at benchmarking, we did a significant amount of benchmarking externally, looking at best practices in government and industry, reading a whole lot of journal articles to see what actually has worked, talking to partners, both industry and government, who share in similar challenges. What are they doing? How mm-hmm. are they doing it? Combined with, certainly current thinking from a human capital perspective, best in breed practices and thinking and research and all of that combined to pull together to what kinds of things should we try that we haven't tried before, or mm-hmm. maybe we should try differently.
Do you have to look at best practices differently because you're a part of the intelligence community? Or are there sometimes, square pegs, round holes that you have to think about?
So that, obviously the requirement to have a security clearance and to be processed pretty extensively, background investigation, is different But at the end of the day, that generally speaking is not a limiter to us being able to get folks into our spaces. Mm-hmm. We have a fairly robust and successful recruiting effort. We're able to attract a lot of folks.
Have you had to change the way that you recruit and the places that you recruit as you've embarked on this this journey for better equality, for sure, a more diverse workforce?
Sure. So I've spent a whole lot of time with our recruitment team.
Uh-huh.
First, understanding what are we currently doing and what have we historically been successful at. And they are phenomenal. And the good news is that they would say, and I agree, we're changing our recruitment tactics almost on an annual basis because that's how dynamic the environment is. We're looking for specifically skilled folks given today's environment and today's challenges, and also thinking about what we might need in the future. So we're regularly, flexing our recruitment strategies in order to be able to attract those that we need.
I'm jotting down a note here that I wonder how much of that change on an ongoing basis is driven by the potential recruits and the way that you want to communicate the mission of the agency to them, and how much of it's driven by the changing needs inside the intelligence community and inside NSA, and how much of it may be driven by other factors that we haven't talked about.
Right. So to your first point, quite a bit, because today's generation likes to receive information differently. They mm-hmm. want to engage differently. They ask different questions. They have different work pace, work ethic, work expectations. And so we've had to tailor our approach to reaching out and engaging with that generation very differently from the way we did years and years and years ago. From an intelligence community perspective, we have different needs also today. And we also have a vision of what we expect we might need in the future. And that helps shape both who we are targeting today, mm-hmm. And what we think we might need in the future.
Do you find that people in younger age cohorts and various other demographic cohorts have different perceptions of the NSA than groups that you've targeted historically?
Well, certainly the post-2013 events have raised consciousness across the nation and the world about NSA, about mm-hmm. what we do. And so to that respect, we've been very open and honest in encouraging those dialogues on college campuses mm-hmm. and with partners around. So we get asked some questions. Quite frankly, lately, not so many. Folks are just interested in knowing what are the greatest challenges in front of us right now and how can they help solve them.
The recruitment piece is only one part of it. Retention is another big thing. And I talk to HR leaders and diversity officials all across the government about the retention piece as well and the challenges that they're up against. Do you find that your challenges are the same as, similar to, or maybe different from the retention challenges that a more typical civilian agency might have? Are there things that are peculiar about retention to the intelligence community and to NSA in particular?
So if I just talk about the STEM-skilled workforce, mm-hmm. we're all competing for that segment. We all are struggling to get the right talent in that in the STEM field. And the numbers aren't as high, the availability is not as high as any of us would like.
Mm-hmm.
So that aside, our attrition is actually very low. Even that included, our attrition, from a holistic perspective, is very low.
Mm-hmm. And the numbers, I imagine, are some of the biggest challenges that you're up against, is just the sheer volume of people that are available, candidates that you would like to hire, is probably the toughest pull you're up against right now.
Yeah, so, we're able to attract, again, a lot of folks who show interest in wanting to work with us. But there's a process, and it's a fairly complicated process, mm-hmm. To both identify those that meet the specific skills required for a given job, and then to put them through the paces to qualify to actually get in. And that takes time.
To the retention piece, how are you addressing differently, if at all, maybe it's the same process, how are you addressing kind of the career building aspect of bringing people in, especially younger folks and people from different demographic groups that haven't historically been attracted to the NSA? Is that a different process, or is that the same as it's been? Once you've got them, you're developing them into leadership capacity the same way?
So so there's some things that have been around for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've been at the agency for 31 years. I started at NSA as an intern. Our intern programs are really still a hallmark of how we bring folks in. We nurture them through the development, rotating tours over every 6 to 9 to 12 months, and then you pop out 2 to 3 years later, having great knowledge about the agency and being able to apply what you might have learned academically to the mission, and then you go off to do a real job and progress to the agency. Those programs are very, very vibrant and are still a great way for us to bring folks in. But also, when we bring folks in, we also have some onboarding programs that provide, you know, the comfort of being among a cohort, being with folks who came in when you came in. We offer, you know, mentoring opportunities specifically for that group of folks. And then we have, you know, seniors who volunteer to be sort of the, you know, helper for that cohort mm-hmm. to, you know, ask a question, give some guidance, help make sure that they can be moving through the system in the way they'd like.
I cheated and used my calculator to figure out that a 31-year career at the agency means you started there in 1984. So you started when you were about 8 years old.
I was actually six.
Okay.
Thank you.
So that's what it appears. And I wonder how the culture has changed, especially regarding diversity and equality issues at the agency in that period of time, because 1994 or 2004 in some agencies were dramatically different times for diversity and inclusion and equality. So I imagine 30 years in an agency like NSA was a different time.
Oh, it's drastically changed over those years. I mean, when I started at NSA, there were very few minorities moving in the hallways, very few women in senior positions for sure. Today, that's not the case. You know, we've got certainly many, many more minorities and lots of women in senior positions. So it's changed significantly. And I think perhaps the most important change has been an awareness of the value of having a diverse workforce mm-hmm. and a genuine desire, not because it's about meeting numbers, not because it's about goals, but a recognition of the value that it can bring to the mission.
Well, and I've been struck by the discussion that we've seen around the success of two women to make it through Army Ranger School this week, about the ongoing emphasis, both inside the Army and outside the Army, that these are women who have met the standards of Ranger School, not we've adjusted the standards so that women can be successful in this case. And it sounds, from what I've read and what I've seen other places, that's the same situation that you're working on at National Security Agency.
It absolutely is. I remember this was probably 20 years ago easily, when I was selected or asked to take a foreign trip. And when we actually got to the point of beginning to finalize the planning, I was advised that actually I wasn't the right person to go because this particular partner didn't have the same respect for women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was, you know, a little over 20 years ago. That's not the case today. And so we've come a long way.
What are the drivers behind that? Are they primarily the societal drivers that we're seeing in other parts of our culture as a country? Or are there specific steps that the agency's taken in the time that you've been there, or some combination of those, or something else?
Well, so NSA is not unique in that we are a microcosm of the nation we live in. Mm-hmm. And so what we've seen outside of NSA is the advancement of women. You hear a lot about it, not at the rate that women would like. Advancement of minorities, but not at the rate that we'd like. But we're moving in a good direction. NSA is no different. We're exactly the same way. And so we're mirroring that as we recognize the value, as we worry a lot less about a woman who might choose to take off a couple of months to be at home during childbearing years, but then comes back and is vibrant and rich and can contribute just as well.
Tell me about some of the other jobs that you've held at NSA and how they've informed what you're doing today.
Sure. So the last job was the Director of Information Assurance. And I was in that job for about 4.5 years. And prior to that, the deputy. So altogether about 6 years. I learned a whole lot there about and every leadership position I've had. Your success, my personal success, is measured on how much did I gain and what can I put in my toolkit mm-hmm. after that. So I learned a whole lot about negotiating, learned a whole lot about a collaborative decision making and team building. And learned a little bit about patience, but I would say that this current job I'm in, I'm learning the most about patience.
What is it about that job that requires patience?
So coming from, you know, almost totally, or in factually totally, a mission background,
mm-hmm.
and now in more of a what we call an enabler, you know, taking care of the people piece, things don't move quite as quickly in mm-hmm. this space as they do because of the mission mandate on the other side. So for me, it has been about hurry up and wait. It's been a lot about influencing, by the way, because I don't have a large organization. Mm-hmm. Instead, I have relationships, I have authority, and I have a large mantle, in order to be able to execute the mission.
Negotiation's important, I imagine, in that that situation, and also the leadership skills that you've learned, because you really are, I imagine, persuading folks in addition to trying to set up strategies and all of that. I imagine a lot of what you do is persuasion, that this is to the benefit of the mission of the organization.
Well, I'll tell you, if there's a surprise for me, it's that I haven't had to spend a lot of time. Once I've been able to settle on a specific way forward, I haven't had to work very hard to convince anyone that it's the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in the implementation.
Yeah.
And that's where it takes patience.
Uh-huh.
And that's where it takes negotiation, because there are always trade-offs. If you're going to go this way, is there a cost? Is there a time component? Is there some other process that might be impacted by it that you have to take into account?
Mm-hmm. Is that confidence that you draw from that, do you think, because of the fact that Admiral Rogers created the job, so you kind of go around the agency with everybody understanding you're there for a reason and you're there because the top person said you should be there?
No, I think that probably has some a lot to do with it, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty open about establishing the position, communicating to the workforce why, naming me to it. And I'm not an unknown at NSA with a whole lot of years and a whole lot of jobs behind me.
What was your first thought when you were approached about taking this job?
I thought it was a great idea. In fact, it's something I had considered, but I wasn't really sure what it might look like,
mm-hmm.
what it would be. But I really thought I was intrigued. I wasn't sure, you know, how much of a job it would be. I'm pleasantly surprised at how busy I am
uh-huh.
on a regular basis. I was pretty excited about it.
So you're about a little less than a year in. What do you expect this job to encompass in the coming year?
Mm-hmm.
And what specifics or generalities do you hope to be able to execute or implement in the coming year?
So more of what has already transpired, which is looking again at processes, identifying areas that might need to be addressed, identify training opportunities for segments of the workforce or for all of the workforce, identifying awareness opportunities. You know, one of the things that we did in January was to develop a new set of diversity requirements for our senior executive population. One of the requirements was that seniors would engage in some type of activity with their workforce that would raise their and their organization's awareness of the importance of diversity. And just a couple of weeks ago, I sent out an email to the senior population and said, so would you be willing to share what you've done so that other seniors may also get some great ideas, but also so the workforce can see.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I was blown away by the activities that have happened in just, you know, that first 7 months. So it's that kind of thing that is energizing and exciting and really speaks to the commitment of all of NSA to move us into a greater place.
It's part of that success, you think, because what you, the solutions that you asked for weren't prescriptive. You have to do one of these three activities, or something. You gave folks some latitude to be able to determine what fit their team.
I think it's a mixture, right? Certainly that, but someone who would prefer to be told didn't like that idea so much,
that's
right?
True.
Part of the discovery and the learning is in actually discovering and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that piece too. But there are other requirements that weren't so optional. We were pretty prescriptive, so it's a balance.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the ones that you thought were the most interesting? Some of the team building and engagement activities that were that struck you as particularly thoughtful or creative or engaging or any of that?
So there were a number of seniors who brought in speakers, who pulled articles and had sit-down discussions, not just once, but multiple times with their leadership teams. Where we would have a special emphasis month, whether it be Black History Month or Women's History Month, and corporately we might bring in a speaker, they would follow up with that speaker by going back into their workplace and bringing a leadership team together or a segment of the workforce and just say, let's talk about it. I was really touched by those because they were heartfelt, they were genuine,
mm-hmm.
and they described the discussions as heartfelt and genuine.
Going back to the year, 2 year out planning, how do you look back in a year or 2 years from now and decide that the efforts that you've undertaken have been successful? Is it just looking at the mosaic of the workforce and seeing that it doesn't look the same as it did before, or is there more to it than
that? So that's the easy way. Uh-huh. You can always count. But that really isn't the lasting way. The lasting way is that you have a change in perspective, a change in ethos within the organization. And I really believe that that's happening. Mm-hmm. One of the other things we instituted in the spring was unconscious bias training for all of the workforce. And I hear people talking about it. I hear them talking about it in the halls, and really positively, because it raises awareness about the fact that we all have biases. Mm-hmm. Biases aren't good or bad. They just are, right? And as long as you can be aware of them and make sure that you use them in the right and not the wrong way, mm-hmm. it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to measure that, though? Or is it just that you get a sense that things are different than they were at some point in the past when you stop to think about it?
You certainly get a strong sense of it. But again, there are ways that we can measure as we look at outputs and outcomes. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we're looking at outputs and outcomes. For me personally, I can measure it by, over time, the number of folks that come to me with concerns, right? Mm-hmm. Over time, those words change. They start to change, and I think that's starting to happen.
Mm-hmm. As you continue to see that happen, how do you hope to build on what you've done so far? I'm not suggesting you should go anytime soon, but at some point in time, you'll want to hand off your portfolio to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Of course, when Admiral Rogers steps aside and you take his place, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. that wasn't your idea. That was mine. But at some point in time, you want to make sure that the work that you've done becomes embedded into the fabric of the organization. As I imagine a big piece of the work that you're doing, you perceive to be cultural as much as operational.
You know, so the way to institute lasting change is to ensure that it is embedded in the business practices and processes and policies and procedures of the organization, and that there is such strong buy-in that when someone tries to veer from one of those paths, someone pulls them back in and says, and that's the culture piece. It's, mm-hmm. no, that's not the way we're going to do business mm-hmm. here. And so that's what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. As we institute changes, we want to make sure they are promulgated in the right vehicles so that they will last. We want to make sure the right accountabilities are documented so everybody sort of knows what their responsibilities, and then we actually have to look and count mm-hmm. and measure.
I don't expect you to name names because there are probably too many to be able to name and you'll forget some, but who are the most important partners that you have at the agency to help you fulfill the mission that you're doing to support the mission of the agency?
Right, so there are three mm-hmm. that I would immediately call out. I'd call out all, but I'd say three immediately. Our Equal Employment Opportunity and Diversity Organization, who has been carrying the banner for many of these activities and continues to do so. They are responsible for setting our goals. They're responsible for managing our programs and our processes. I'd call out our Human Resources Organization because a lot of the processes that I've looked at and continue to look at are managed by Human Resources. And unfortunately for them, when it's a change that I want, they get to implement it, right? So I want to be really close with them.
Yes.
And then our General Counsel, because everything that I want to do, I want to make sure I do legally. Mm-hmm. And so they become my best friends. And then within our Equal Employment Opportunity and Diversity Organization, we have something called Employee Resource Groups. Fairly recently established within, the past 6 or 7 years, a wonderful group of ERGs focused on a given, like a women's ERG or African-American ERG or Hispanic Latino ERG, people with disabilities. And they serve really as a resource for me to go in, talk with them, hear from them as they represent a constituency. What are the things we ought to be concerned about? And they roll up their sleeves and say, I want to help. And mm-hmm. that's been very valuable.
We just have a few minutes left. I thank you very much for your generous gift of time today. As you survey the landscape of the agency, are there particular cohorts, groups that you expect to place an additional emphasis on as you're trying to bring people into the agency? Or are you just committed to making sure that overall the National Security Agency is a diverse, inclusive, equality-driven place for people to work?
I think the latter, for sure, overall, because, numbers rise and fall. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to be so fixated on that you miss the opportunity to get the right composition and the right components in to really achieve the mission. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, our goal is to be the leader in the intelligence community for diversity and equality and inclusion. And so we're partnering across the intelligence community with others who share in that passion.
How much of the idea of diversity and equality and inclusion is skills-based as opposed to demographics-based? Rather than I belong to a particular group, I have skills that contribute in a way that not many people around the agency
have.
So
when I say diversity, I really do mean it in the broadest sense of the word. Factually, we are required by law to measure certain certain demographic groups, mm-hmm. demographics. We do that. We measure that. We care about that. But we care just as much about making sure that we have the right balance of computer scientists against language analysts, mm-hmm. that we have the right, you know, information assurance analysts who can both help us protect and defend our national security system. So we care about all that. It's complicated as a result, getting the right balance.
It certainly sounds like it. Any final thoughts before we wrap up? I appreciate your time very much.
Yeah, so we're really excited about the road ahead for us and really believe that we'll see a change in tide over time. Not just at NSA, but really across the landscape, because the most important thing that we as a nation can do is take advantage of the diversity that is inherent in our being. That's what we were built on, mm-hmm. and we want to be a part of that.
Congratulations on your success, and thanks very much for your time,
Thank
Deborah.
Thank you so much.